This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Well, special program for you today. We'll hear from FRC board member and former member of Congress, Michelle Bachmann. We'll also hear from Dr. Keenan Cureton, Family Research Council's vice president of our church ministries, David Christensen, who serves as our vice president of government affairs and the director of our Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber, and our own Peter Sprigg, senior fellow for policy studies, will join me as well. So a lot of ground to cover today, but just giving you a little deeper understanding of the Family Research Council and what we do. And I know you, those that listen frequently hear me on the air every day, but look, I'm just kind of the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more to the Family Research Council. We've got a great team of policy experts, of media folks. We've got folks that lobby for you on Capitol Hill. We've got it all right here. We've got 85 people that work for the Family Research Council. And so it's a lot going on here, and I just happen to have the privilege of leading a team of very committed men and women who love the Lord Jesus Christ, care deeply about this country, and feel it and believe it to be a privilege to represent you here in Washington, D.C. And let me remind you, we are still just a little short of our year-end goal, and we have a matching grant challenge. We have a generous donor that has said between now and the end of the year, just a couple of days left, they'll match anything that you give. So if you make a contribution, it'll be matched. All you have to do is call 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, and your gift will be matched. You can also do it online at tonyperkins.com. Some of you may know, while others may not know, the extent of the Family Research Council and what we do here in Washington, D.C. as it pertains to defending and advancing faith, family, and freedom. But someone who knows well, who we've worked right alongside with on Capitol Hill on many, many issues, is our first guest, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who represented Minnesota's 6th Congressional District from 2007 to 2014. And we are privileged to now have her as a member of the board of the Family Research Council, and she joins me now. Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, what a privilege to be with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking a little time out of the holiday season to join us in talking in this special program kind of about FRC. And, of course, you and I have known each other for a long time. Even before you came to Congress, you were a state senator in Minnesota leading the effort to defend marriage and the sanctity of life and all those things. So we made common cause way back then when it came to the issues that so many Christians care about. Share with our listeners a little bit about your involvement, why you got involved in public policy, why you ran for office, and what motivates Michelle Bachmann.
Sure. Number one, my faith motivates me. I became a Christian when I was 16 years of age, but I was a foster mother. We had 5 biological children, but we were privileged to foster 23 great teenage girls. And during the course of that time, I saw a lot of nonsense that came home in their backpacks. Our biological children were either homeschooled or we sent them to Christian school, but the state of Minnesota only allowed public school for our foster children. So I was very concerned about what they were learning at school. And that is really, Tony, what got me involved in politics. I was very disturbed by things that our foster children were bringing home in the backpack. And I used Family Research Council as a vehicle for me as an at-home mother to be able to find out more information about public schools. And I needed a place to turn to for answers. And Family Research Council was that place to give me answers about America's public school system.
Now, Michelle, in case someone missed it, how many foster children did you have?
We had 23 great girls, and we had 5 biological children, not all at the same time.
Oh, I was going to say, you didn't live in a shoe, did you?
Yeah, I am the old woman. That's what I am. But it was so great. And we had about 4 foster children at any given time. The average length of stay was about 2 years. They'd come to our home when they were 16. They weren't going to go home again to their biological family. And so we made sure that the children graduated from high school. So that meant in our home, we had a census of about 9 kids at any given time. And that, as I said, is what got me into politics. I was because I knew that about 10% of America's kids are either homeschooled or they go to Christian school. But 90%+ of America's kids go to public school. So it's very important that we pay attention to what's going on in public schools, because that will define our culture. And I found the Family Research Council to be a wealth of knowledge to me when I was trying to find out what I could do as a mother to better my foster children's education.
Well, see, I'm always thrilled to hear your story, because I think it's a wonderful story, and it's one that shows how someone who is helping people out, you know, taking children into their home, taking care of them, just all of a sudden seeing what's happening out there and saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. And not just complaining about it, but doing something about it. You went all the way from being a foster mother to being a candidate for the president of the United States of America, and a viable candidate for president. And you ran a great campaign. And that just shows, I think, should speak to so many mothers who are at home, that you can make a difference. The key, as you pointed out, number one, equipping yourself with the right information, having the moral courage to speak up when these things are not right, and you can make a difference.
You really can, because never underestimate the power of telling the truth. It's something that this culture isn't always getting, as we know. And when you find out facts and truth about something that's going on, I, as a mother, found out and equipped myself about what was happening in our public schools. And it wasn't just my opinion. I found test questions and teacher preparation materials and textbooks, all sorts of materials. And I put together a 2-hour presentation, and I traveled the state of Minnesota and shared with other parents what I had learned. And over the course of 5 years, Minnesota became the only state in the nation that actually threw off the federal government standards. We got rid of them. And in a very unlikely liberal state, you know, we're the state that had Al Franken as our senator. So we were a very unlikely state, but whether parents were Democrat, Independent, or Republican, or of no political party at all, they loved their kids and cared about their kids. And what they would say to me is, Michelle, not with my kids, they don't. And here's my pitchfork. Where do I sign up? So it's amazing what a mom can do when she can get educated and when she can share with others. And like you said, Tony, I went from being a foster mom at home to eventually running for the presidency of the United States. I mean, that isn't a career path I was planning on, but it was one that I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to follow.
And you've made a huge impact on this country. Michelle Bachmann, my guest on this special edition of Washington Watch. Michelle, I don't want to run out of time here, but I want to ask you, you went to Congress. What would you say was the biggest surprise that you found serving in the United States Congress?
The biggest surprise that I found is that the American people have implicit trust in their members of Congress. They truly believe that Congress will do the right thing for them. And I think that that is horrifying, because members of Congress are also people. And when they're there, they are also thinking about what's the best thing for themselves. In other words, what will keep them to be able to get elected. And so oftentimes, I hate to say this, but many times members of Congress did what was in the best interest of the lobbyists or the donor community, rather than what was in the best interest of people back home. And that shocked me, that people would be willing to put their own personal interests in front of the interests of the country.
Yeah, that is. And political preservation, personal preservation, trying to make sure that they come back seems to be a top priority for many. As you and I actually remember having these conversations with you when you felt the Lord leading you to step out of Congress. You could have easily ran for re-election, but you decided the Lord said it's time to move on. You weren't clear exactly what that was, and the Lord's still unfolding that plan. However, one of the things that you did do was join the board of the Family Research Council, and I'd like you to share with our listeners why, of all the organizations you could have served on the boards of, that you chose to serve with the Family Research Council.
Well, Tony, I chose the Family Research Council because it was an absolute honor and delight for me to be able to serve on it, because I have such history for so many decades with this organization, and I've seen it inside and out. It is first class. It is stellar. They do so much with so little. It is amazing. They do what other organizations take dollars to do. They do with pennies, and yet they yield results far beyond the amount of money that comes into the organization. From my perspective as a member of Congress, I saw Family Research Council, in my mind, have a greater and wider impact than almost any other organization on Capitol Hill for those who are concerned about the pro-family agenda. That is not to take a swipe at any other organization. Mm-hmm. I just know firsthand from my perspective, no organization covered a greater breadth of issues, but or more deeply or more effectively. They knew when it was time to get involved in a fight. Every organization has limited resources. You cannot take on every fight. But the Family Research Council got involved in the right fights. And for much of the time when I was in Congress, my party was not in the White House. It was the opposite party. Now my party is in the White House. I have seen the Family Research Council have effectiveness all the way to the Oval Office and into the Pentagon, in the Department of Defense, in many different departments, in the Health and Human Services. And I think it is really jaw-dropping when you think the level of impact that this organization is having, both in terms of communicating to believers all across this country about pro-family issues, but taking those concerns into the corridors of power, the real corridors of power, before the real decision makers, and getting results. Without Family Research Council, quite frankly, I don't know that we would have seen the level of movement that we saw on dealing with advancing religious liberty, or with taking up the issue of transgenders in the military, or dealing with many other issues that that people may not even be aware of.
Well, we are grateful for you and so thankful, Michelle, that you have agreed to serve on our board. And I just want to take a moment just to wish you a happy new year, and I look forward to seeing you and working with you in the year ahead.
Oh, me too. Many great things will happen because of Family Research Council this year. Thanks for your leadership, Tony.
All right, Michelle, thank you so much. Folks, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Coming up next, we'll talk with Dr. Keenan Cureton, who is the Vice President of Church Ministries here at the Family Research Council. Don't go away. We're back right after this. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to tonyperkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose: to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Hey, let me remind you, just a few days, and we'll be at the end of the year. And we have had a great year in terms of the opportunities we've had, but honestly, we're coming up the end of the year a little short financially, and so you can help us in a tremendous way. If you'll partner with us. Now, all the monies that support this program come from folks like you across the country. And right now, we still have some of the match left that if you, whatever you give, will be matched by a generous donor. So if you'll give us a call, 800-225-4008, we have folks standing by to take your phone call. That's 800-225-4008, or you can make a donation online at TonyPerkins.com. So become a partner with the Family Research Council and make sure that Washington Watch continues to reach people all across this country. All right, part of our mission here at the Family Research Council is to equip pastors, church leaders, and folks in the pews. I mean, that's the hope for our country. And in a large part of what we do here in Washington, D.C., at the Family Research Council, not that we think politics is going to save America or change America, but politics, policy set the rules by who can participate and how. And we believe that the greatest hope for America is an informed, engaged, and spirit-filled church that, and I say church, that's Christians, followers of Jesus, who will go out into the workplace, into education, into the world around us, and live out their faith, and free to do so. That's what's going to change America. And so we're partnering with churches across America to engage Christians, inspire Christians, and encourage them to go out and live their faith in such a way is that it transforms the world around them. And with us now is Dr. Keenan Cureton. He is the vice president here at the Family Research Council of our church ministries, and under his leadership, the FRC Watchman on the Wall Network has grown from about 1,800 pastors to nearly 41,000 pastors that we connect with all across the country. Keenan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
Well, it's been an encouraging year when we've seen the effect of pastors and churches over the last 18 months of engaging in our culture and in the process. Before we get too far down into that, though, I want to just ask you to give our listeners a definition of what is a watchman pastor?
Well, Tony, we get that right out of the scriptures. Isaiah 62, 6 and 7 is our baseline verse that talks about the watchman on the walls. And essentially what we want pastors to do is to watch what's going on in the culture, pray for the wisdom to engage the culture biblically, winsomely, courageously, sound the alarm from the pulpit at the threats that they see on the horizon, which are multitude right now, and to lock arms with fellow pastors. So essentially we ask them to do three things that start with P. Pastors are, you know, kind of, they like alliterated sermons a lot of times with their sermon points, or at least I do. And so we ask them to pray and lead their church to become a house of prayer. And we also ask them to preach to the whole counsel of God, including what it says about government, public policy, and how it relates to, you know, the culture that we live in. And then finally, the third P, pray, preach, and then partner, and that is to find some like-minded pastors in that community, lock arms together, pray together, and seek salt and light solutions to the problems that they see in their community, in their state, and then, of course, all across the nation. So praying, preaching, and partnering, that's what a pastor that we call a watchman pastor does.
So then, Dr. Cureton, how does a pastor, maybe there's some pastors out there listening and say, you know what, that sounds pretty interesting. How do they become a part of this network?
Well, that's easy. They just go to the watchmanpastors.org website and click on About Us. They can see a brief video that you did introducing the ministry to pastors, and then there's a little a brief letter there from you, a note from you, and then right below that, they can click on that link and can sign up to become a watchman pastor who's praying, preaching, and partnering with other pastors. So they can go to the website and do that, or they can come to one of the events that we do across the country. And of course, the flagship event that we do is every May this next year, 2018. It'll be our 15th annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing there in D.C., May the 23rd through the 25th. And it's going to be a tremendous event. So they can come to an event or they can go online, either way.
Well, Dr. Cureton, before we run out of time, I want to ask you this question because I know it may be on the mind of some pastors who are out there, at least some parishioners who might want to approach their pastor and say, well, you know what? I like what you're doing, but, you know, politics, I'm not into politics, and I don't think that belongs in the church.
Right. Well, you know, when you look at that video that I mentioned, I would just challenge the pastor to go watch your video because you answer that question because, you know, in the Bible we see all these examples of men of God who confronted the political leaders and the government in their day. You got Moses in front of Pharaoh pleading for the liberty of God's people. You've got Elijah confronting King Ahab for his idolatry and promoting of immorality in Israel. And on we can go as far as biblical examples. You've got examples in American history as well. But, you know, for the contemporary pastor, maybe that's not convincing to him. But great survey from George Barna tells us that 90% of these Bible-believing pastors agree that the Bible speaks to these burning moral issues that are being debated in the public arena. The problem is only 10% are addressing those. And yet another Barna survey that came out shows us that most of their members want to hear about these moral issues that are being debated in the public arena. 91% want to hear about abortion and life issues, 86% on religious liberty, 83% on cultural restoration.
We help bridge that divide between the pulpit and the pews. Keenan, got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a happy new year. Folks, don't go away. We're back right after this with more. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. Website, TonyPerkins.com. Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, taking a look at several aspects of the FRC, the organization, and the various components and parts. I mean, a lot of people think, it's just me in the back of working out of the back of a Suburban. No, that's actually not what it is. It's an organization about 85 people, dedicated, committed, called to the work that they do, and for almost 35 years. One of the key efforts of Family Research Council has been in our policy and in our governmental affairs, actually working on Capitol Hill to shape public policy. And here in studio with us, a voice that is familiar to frequent listeners of Washington Watch, is FRC's Vice President for Government Affairs, David Christensen. He oversees FRC's work on the Hill on the range of issues that we speak to. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be back.
David, just to start with, before we get into some specifics of what we've seen accomplished in this past year, some of the high notes, give our listeners a little sense of what government affairs, what your team does here.
Well, we work with a lot of friendly legislators, congressmen, senators. We attend a lot of meetings. We're sending a lot of research information to them. We help draft legislation. We provide expertise to them on the issues that we care about. And so a lot of times it's sometimes like intelligence work. You hear from one quarter, you give information to another.
Well, oftentimes we bridge between the two chambers.
That's correct.
Because they don't always talk to each other, and we shuttle information back and forth.
I was at a meeting where a Senate staffer gave an overview of the Senate tax reform bill, didn't know what was in the House bill that had passed. The House staffer didn't know what was in the Senate bill, and we provided a handout that compared both. So yeah, those are the kinds of things that we do too.
And historically, looking back, as I said, over almost 35 years that FRC has been here, some of these coalitions that you talked about, some of these meetings like the Values Action Team, mm-hmm. that now is a fixture in Congress, was an idea that originated with FRC, and FRC helped launch years ago.
Yeah, the Values Action Team, long led by retired Congressman Pitts, is now taken over in the House by Representative Vicky Hartzler and Senator Roy Blunt in the Senate. There's co-chairs. Really ups the issues of values and gives a platform where members are being educated directly on the issues of life, religious liberty, family values. And then they have direct conduits to member-level conversations, leadership, and frankly, even the president. And that's obviously extremely important.
I want to get to probably what you'd say the top three victories for 2017 were. But before I do that, you just came out of Christmas, and one of my favorite movies we watch every year, It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart. The storyline's great. And so along those lines, when I ask the question, you know, would all of these things that we see from a pro-family, pro-life perspective, would those things happen if you didn't have FRC and organizations like that here in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think the answer is clearly no. Two things. One is I think we elevate important issues. I know people want to see bills signed into a law and achievements, and sometimes it may be only the House that passes something and not the Senate. But elevating it to the level where it actually becomes routine. Passing the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act early this last year was standard. It took three Congresses to get that to become.
And it has to have a driver.
It has to have a driver.
And oftentimes those drivers, although we have champions on the inside,
yes,
it takes a driver, someone who is doing the research, doing the messaging, and even pushing leadership. Oftentimes we have more influence with the leadership than some of the members.
Sometimes a member of Congress will call and say, hey, we need you to reach out to leadership. And, you know, we've developed those relationships. You certainly have. And knowing when we are going to score a vote favorably or against a vote, that is important to a lot of members and a lot of senators. And so,
and of course, it's important because listeners and our supporters across the country respond to that. They use our scorecards. Mm-hmm. When it comes to election time, but they also respond by making the phone calls. All right, before we run out of time, boy,
yes,
that time goes quick. Top three legislative victories for 2017.
Number one, passage of the a resolution blocking Obama's regulation that prevented states from defunding Planned Parenthood. The House passed that with our support. The Senate actually got it through with 51 votes. President Trump signed it into law. Now states can defund Planned Parenthood without the threat of the federal government stamping on them. That's a clear victory. That's going to save lives. We are working on religious liberty issues regarding the Johnson Amendment, elevating that to the highest levels to allow pastors and nonprofits to speak on political issues. I think that's extremely important. And I would say some of the regulation rollbacks, HHS contraceptive mandate exemption is something that we pushed really hard on the White House and HHS on. People are now going to be protected like the Little Sisters and the Hobby Lobbies of this world.
A lot of that just undoing the bad stuff, mm-hmm, that was done under the Obama administration. So yet to come is actually putting in place a lot of the good stuff that needs to be done. That's coming up in 2018 and beyond. So folks, need you to stay involved and engaged. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. There's still more to come as we take a look at our policy shop coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Tony Perkins here with Washington Watch. You know, in all of my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that has encouraged me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support enabled FRC this year to play a major role in the Trump administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a couple. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally and hopefully defund Planned Parenthood. For a limited time, you can participate in our matching grant challenge. If you make a gift right now, it will be doubled. Please stand with FRC at this moment. You can make your gift now by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose: to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we're just days away from the end of the year, which is a critical point for nonprofit organizations like ours. This is a period in time in which we receive a lot of our financial support from across the country, and it's been a demanding year, a great year with a lot of opportunities, but costly. And we're a little bit behind as we come to the end of the year, and certainly would appreciate your partnership. This program, Washington Watch, comes to you strictly based upon the gifts and the financial partnership of folks like you across the country. So if you'd like to be a part of bringing this program, continuing this program, well, give us a call, 800-225-4008. And we have a special partner that's committed to match everything that you give. Everything you give will be matched through the end of this year. Just a few more days left. So give us a call, 800-225-4008, or you can do it online at TonyPerkins.com. Well, as I mentioned, it's been a great year of opportunities, challenges, but a lot of opportunities. And it's been a lot of it has focused on the issue of religious liberty and those battles, from bakers being forced to bake cakes for same-sex weddings, going against their strongly held religious beliefs, to advising political leaders on important policies that impact our culture, our government, our churches, and our families. And with us now is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at Family Research Council, Travis Weber, and Peter Sprigg, senior fellow for policy studies here at FRC. Gentlemen, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Travis, I'm going to start with you. You testified on religious freedom in the Armed Forces Committee before the Military Personnel Subcommittee. Give us a take on where things stand in the military as it pertains to religious freedom.
Yeah, so this is one of the areas that we monitor.
And by the way, I should say that Travis is a veteran of the military, naval grad, a Naval Academy grad, former Navy pilot, and so you have more than just a policy understanding of the military.
That's correct, Tony. You know, it's close to my heart, and this is one of the areas that we monitor as part of our religious freedom work. We've continued this year to see the usual complaints against public displays of religion from the anti-religious activists, but also the other area of concern involving religious beliefs regarding sexuality still is a problem in terms of making sure those people are protected. Most recently, we have a case of Colonel Bohannon in the Air Force, who was disciplined for not wanting to sign a spouse certificate for a subordinate involved in a same-sex marriage. And this is the type of conflict that we've really been particularly focused on. This case is ongoing. We've called attention to it significantly and will continue to do so. So this, just like the incidents we see throughout society, this type of incident is an ongoing concern in the military.
And Travis, I want to turn to your traveling partner here, as Peter Sprigg, and you guys have been crisscrossing the globe. You were in Hungary earlier this year speaking to these issues. And Peter, interestingly enough, increasingly we're seeing foreign governments, a lot of them in Europe, looking to FRC and pro-family leaders here in this country for help in their countries.
That's right. Travis and I both attended the World Congress of Families in Budapest back in May. And as part of our trip there, we also there had actually been a group from Hungary that had visited FRC a few years earlier. And so we reached out to them. They're from a large church there. And they actually invited us to come and speak not once but twice at some of their events. The initial report we had, they were going to have us speak to a youth group. I'm picturing like 25 teenagers or something. Their youth group was about 400 students at their college/seminary, St. Paul Academy. And then they invited us back the next night to speak at their worship service. And this is actually Faith Church in Budapest is actually the largest charismatic church in all of Europe, not just in Hungary. And they had 8 to 10,000 people, I think, estimated at their worship service. And so Travis and I were very privileged to be part of that. And subsequent to that, you know, we had someone from the well, Travis and I did this show devoted to that trip one time, had someone from the Hungarian government come on with us and be interviewed. We've had a couple of delegations from Hungary come and visit us since then. But that's not the only country that does this. We find that a lot of times when pro-family activists from other countries are visiting the United States and visiting Washington, one of the top things on their agenda is to come to Family Research Council and see what we do here.
Yeah, I've been amazed by that, actually, especially just since the election, where I think a lot of foreign governments that have conservatives like Hungary, Romania, and some of the others, where they're seeing the impact that evangelicals have had in this country on the political realm, they're looking not only just beyond the politics, but to the policy-driven aspects of that. Now, Travis, you were in Belgium as well, right?
Yes, and it was to address the issue that you just mentioned. The gathering in Brussels, right near the European Parliament, wanted to address for Christians in Europe the role that and study the role that Christians in the United States played in the election, and seeing that our policies are advanced under the Trump administration. A lot of Christians over there and at the United Nations recognized the Trump administration's strong positions on life and family values and wanted to understand the role of Christians in that election and what we're doing to see our policies advance so they could see the same thing happen in Europe, where the same cultural struggles are playing out in different countries and an ever-present battle at the United Nations. So it was on that issue that I got to address a number of folks from Europe and all over Europe gathered in Brussels, Belgium. It was very exciting. And just like Peter mentioned, I'll reiterate the ongoing battles that FRC has a chance to speak into around Europe. This is almost like a bonus, you know, to see our work being spread around Europe and affecting a lot of places in Europe.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, joined by Peter Sprigg, Travis Weber, both here at the Family Research Council and our policy division. I guess I must have drawn the short straw. You guys went to Europe. I went to the Middle East. ended up meeting with the president of Egypt for the very same reasons of the impact that evangelicals had here. Foreign leaders, even the Middle East, including the king of Jordan, met with King Abdullah. Interested in those relationships with evangelicals. I want to go a little deeper on the issue set, Peter, because we've seen since the lawlessness of Barack Obama and refusing to defend the Defense of Marriage Act, and then, of course, that led to the
overturning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in our military and so on and so forth, and then, of course, to the Supreme Court redefining marriage. We've seen a very aggressive track by the homosexual activist trying to use the force of government to silence dissent. So those that are preaching tolerance apparently forgot what tolerance is. But that's not limited here to the United States. We're seeing that in these foreign countries as well, oftentimes coming through our own American embassies.
Well, that's true as well. And we have a great concern about that. The agencies like USAID, the Agency for International Development, had under the Obama administration, were actually spending money to support LGBT candidates for office, for example, in foreign countries. We're concerned about Russian interference in our elections,
right.
But there was American interference in other countries' elections. In support of this radical agenda, and particularly in countries like in Africa, where countries were told your aid will be cut off unless you toe the line on these LGBT issues, something very offensive to these countries in terms of their own culture. And so, again, kind of ironically, a form of cultural imperialism that the left is historically would have been considered themselves very anti-imperialist, but when it comes to these social issues, they're very willing to impose Western values on other countries.
And Travis, one of the biggest discussion points of that here in America this year was the Supreme Court case with Masterpiece Cakes, Jack Phillips. The Supreme Court hearing the oral arguments that first of this month, we'll be looking with great anticipation, the court issuing a ruling sometime late spring, early summer.
Yes, this is a very important case for all Christians who hold to historic beliefs about marriage and sexuality, because that's all Jack Phillips, the baker in this case, was doing, seeking to live out his faith through his business. He was sued by the state of Colorado, however, and so far the lower courts have ruled against him, claiming that he's in violation of sexual orientation non-discrimination laws, not respecting his First Amendment rights in that context. So we're looking for the Supreme Court to issue a ruling for his First Amendment rights. Without that, Christians in a number of public roles, whether it's other family businesses, whether in the wedding industry or not, in public life, public service, employees, those doing business with the government, nonprofits, they're all going to be under the same threat of having their beliefs being forced to compromise those beliefs or being forced out of public life under the same framework. That's why this case is so important. We filed an amicus brief in the case, and we hope the Supreme Court rules for Jack Phillips, because without that, there are going to be serious problems for many people in a number of different places in society.
And based on the questioning of the justices, it did sound fairly encouraging.
It did. I was coming out. I came out of the oral argument in better spirits than I went in, and it was good to see.
They weren't serving any drinks or anything.
They were not serving any drinks. No drinks.
Just checking.
Based on the unexpected, promising looking questions from Justice Kennedy toward, and other justices, some of the more liberal justices even, skeptical of the state of Colorado's arguments. Now, we don't know how the court's going to rule. We'll have to wait and see. But those justices at least, were showing concern that the state cannot just railroad Jack Phillips here. Even in the face of these other claims, they recognize same-sex marriage has been put in place by the Supreme Court, but they want to respect Jack Phillips' beliefs too. And I think many people are really concerned about freedom if the court does not rule for Jack Phillips.
And you've made this point before, there's crossover between those who understand religious freedom and free speech. Don't necessarily agree with true social conservatives on some of the social issues, but they understand the paramount importance of the First Amendment.
Yeah, because here there's a First Amendment claim. There's a free exercise of religion claim and a free speech claim, but those are the claims. Now, you have a lot of people agreeing on the importance of free speech and the First Amendment who may disagree on policy, on religion, on social issues, but they all recognize our government needs to uphold a strong First Amendment. So you had people who may have actually supported same-sex marriage but still sided with Jack Phillips here because they recognize if he's not protected, other people may not be protected, and people that, you know, they want to advocate views in the public square, virtually no one is going to have strong free speech protections if the court compromises them here. And that's the way you have to understand the case, and that's why there's a bigger coalition of support for Jack Phillips.
Peter Sprigg, I want to go back to the military for a moment. Travis addressed this, but you have been very much involved in this from a policy standpoint as well. You know, one of the areas where President Trump has fulfilled his campaign promises is in his pledge to move away from the politically correct social engineering in our nation's military. And kind of explain the role that FRC played in leading up to the president's announcement back in July that he would actually reverse, intentionally taking steps to reverse President Obama's policy regarding transgenderism in our military.
Yes. Well, just to, you know, refresh the listener's memory, until 2016, those who identify as transgender, males who want to be females or females who want to be male, have never been permitted to serve in the military. They were excluded. Both those who had had gender reassignment surgery were excluded on medical grounds, and those who had experienced gender dysphoria as a psychological condition were excluded on psychological grounds. That was the policy until July 1st of 2016, just half a year before President Obama left office, when he changed all that. Well, as you mentioned, President Trump had said in a campaign appearance, in fact, an appearance with you and General Boykin, he had spoken about wanting to get away from political correctness in the military, and he has moved to make good on that promise this year. There was a deadline of July 1st, of this year, was when they were going to begin accepting new recruits who were transgender into the military. Secretary Mattis, the defense secretary, at the last minute postponed that for 6 months. And then on July 26th, President Trump issued a policy statement by one of his favorite means, through Twitter, saying that that we will change the policy, and he followed that up with a more formal presidential memorandum in August.
But part of that was helping them understand the cost associated with this. This was going to be very costly,
right? And this is where we made a significant contribution. Actually, David Christensen had asked me to analyze what the cost would be, and we prepared an analysis and came up with the estimate that anywhere from $1.9 to $3.7 billion over 10 years could be the cost of the Obama policy. And that played a factor, we think, in the president's decision.
Well, and that's equivalent to one Navy destroyer.
Exactly.
Two dozen fighter jets. I mean, it's very, very costly. Gentlemen, out of time, but Travis Weber, Peter Sprigg, thank you so much for joining us, and great to have you on the FRC team.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us today. Let me encourage you, visit the website, tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.